Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Mem Aleph Amud Aleph, three lines down. The Gemara is about to ask a question, but I'm going to take a step back because yesterday we finished off speaking about Shvuat Heset, which is a Shvuat that was seemingly introduced in the time of Rav Nachman to take a Shvuat Heset. The major place where the Shvuat Heset was instituted was in issues of Kofar Bakol. We know that the Gemara establishes that Ein Adam Eiz Panav Bifnei Bal Chovo. Therefore, we don't expect a person to be kofar bakol. And we do have them take a shvuah by mudeh b'miksat, because there we know that they are ishtemuteh ishtemateh, that they're trying to slip out, they're trying to get out of paying, so they're doing that in an in-between way. They're not lying completely, but they're not admitting completely. And so the Torah placed a Torah shvuah on the individual by cases of mudeh b'miksat. But obviously, what you know will happen over a certain period of time is that once people figure out that logic, and people are less than honest about certain things, they realize if they are kofar bakol, they won't have to take a shvuah, they can just walk away. If they're motive and mitzvah, they're going to have to take a shvuah. So over time, you incentivize people to be kofar bakol, despite the reluctance or the reticence of individuals to be kofar bakol. So Rav Nachman, in order to deal with that, Rav Nachman's a dayan, he's obviously seeing what's going on, and he understands that there's now a problem developing, that kofar bakol is becoming a better claim for individuals because they can get out of a shvuah. So what he does is he imposes a shvuat heseit on kofar bakol. Shvuat heseit, Rashi over here claims that the language of heseit is lashon shuma, shesamu chachamim alav shvuah, that they put a shvuah on him. They imposed a shvuah on him. That's what he thinks the word heseit means. Others translate the word heseit from the word hasata, which is to dissuade you. It is a shvua to dissuade you from being kofar bakol, because if you're kofar bakol, you're going to take a shvua anyway. So you may as well tell the truth and say whatever it is, whether it's mother mixat or kofar bakol, because you're going to take a shvua in either direction. So that is the establishment of a shvua heseit. It seems like it came into existence around the time of the Amoraim, and that Rav Nachman was a major factor in introducing the shvua heseit. Some Rishonim claim that the Mishnayot have a Shvuat Heseit in them, although those Shvuat Heseit probably were not institutionalized. It might have been a one-off where they had a Shvuat Heseit, but as an institution, Shvuat Heseit is introduced much later and clearly is a rabbinic Shvuah. Now, it is distinct from other rabbinic Shvuot, and this is important because, as we're going to discuss in a minute, that Shvuat Heseit is similar to the Shvuat HaTorah. Shvuat HaTorah is a shvua where a person takes a shvua and they are patur. That means that there's a claim against them. The classic example is the Shomer Chinam, who claims Geneva Vaveda. The person who deposited the item with them says, I left this with you. He says it was stolen, it was lost. He has a right to take a shvua and not have to pay for it. So that's what's called is Nishba V'Niftar. That is your classic case of shvua min HaTorah. Later on in the Masechta, we're going to bump into other shvuot derabanan, which we'll call shvuot ha-mishnah. Those are already found in the Mishnah, shvuot derabanan, and those shvuot derabanan are nishba v'notel. It's a case where you take a shvuah, and then you collect in those situations. We'll see them. A sakhir is a good example of that. A worker, a poel, has a right to take a shvuah in order to get his wages in certain circumstances. That's nishba v'notel. Shvuat HaSeit is different than those because it is similar to the Shvuat HaOraita of Nishba V'Niftar, which is that you're going to take it. When you're kofar bakol, you're going to take a Shvuat HaSeit and you're going to walk away from the situation. So Shvuat HaSeit in that way is much more similar to Shvuat HaTorah. On the other hand, it is much more Dirabanan, we'll call it. It's a much later institution than the Shvuot HaMishnah that we'll bump into later in the Masechta. So the real question about Shvuot HaSeit is the breadth of which Shvuot HaSeit covers. And that is because it is a Shvuot Derabanan. What did the Rabbanan do in terms of instituting the Shvuot HaSeit? So you have here, I sent them out last night as well, which is by Shvuot HaSeit, in Mishpatei Shvuot, the Rav Haigon, he writes the following, which is, V'im ein ta'ana kishir shtei kesef u'pruta, mitchayev b'shvuat haseit. The rabbi here is the first to do it, but we're going to see that other Rishonim and the Gaonim build on this, which is Rabbi Gaon says it doesn't have necessarily the trappings of a shvuah of modeh b'miksat. We just learned over the last 2 days that modeh b'miksat has a minimum requirement, whether it is a ta'anav shtei kesef or at least a kfira of shtei kesef. There is a minimum claim and a minimum denial that needs to be there in order to be chayav a shvuah modeh b'miksat. What Rav Haigon says is none of those apply to Shavuot Eseit. When Shavuot Eseit was instituted, it's kofer bakol, you don't need shtei kesef. A pruta is sufficient to obligate you in Shavuot Eseit. Now, once you do that, you can already see the possibilities of introducing other areas where Shavuot Eseit is going to apply, where Shavuot Deoraita don't apply. The way that the Rav Nachman establishes over here, he says, well, Kovar Bakol is an area the Torah doesn't require Shavuot, so this Shavuot Eseit will come and fill that void. There are other places where we don't have Shavuot Min HaTorah, the Shavuot Eseit come and fill that void. So one of them, which is now, we just spoke about in Rav Haigon, is areas where you're not going to take a Shavuot because the Tana is not big enough. So in a case where otherwise you would have had Modeh B'Miksat, but the Tana is not big enough, or the Kfira is not big enough, or cases by Kofar Bakol where the Tana is not big enough, the Rav Haigon says Shavuot Eseit applies. It still applies in those situations, because that's exactly what it's for. It's there to plug the hole and to close those loopholes in the halacha that allow people to get away without taking a Shavuot. But then, if you look at the Mishnah Shavuot and Rav Haigon later on, he says the following. There are three things which a Shavuot does not apply to. We learned this in Bava Kamma. We learned it again here in Shavuot. The three things that do not have a Shavuot associated with them are Avadim, Karkaot, and Shtarot. Einish bayim aleinim, lo amarnu ela bigzera. Aval Shavuot Eseit, shehi midrabanan. That's only true when we're speaking about Din Doraita. When it comes to Shavuot Eseit, shehi midrabanan, nishbaim aleihem. You take a Shavuot on those items as well. Lefi shematzinu bi gemara, v'alocha nitpashta, larot panim b'chiyuv Shavuot l'karkaot. Since you already find instances of Shavuot and Karkaot in the Gemara, whether it's Agav, whether it's through a Gilgul, whatever it is, we find that sometimes you end up with a Shavuot and Karkaot. Therefore, that institution now allows us to extend Shavuot Eseit to areas where Shavuot would not apply. You can see all of a sudden the breadth of Shavuot Eseit is expanding from what Rav Nachman spoke about. Here, the Rav Haigon gives you two areas where he says Shavuot Eseit is going to fill a void. And that again is where the Tana is not great enough, or areas where Shavuot doesn't apply, like Karka and Avadim. He does say that by Hegdesh, where there is no Shavuot, Shavuot Eseit does not come in and fill that void, because he says that Shavuot only has application, ben Adam lechavero, ben Ish lereyu. We never find any manifestation of a Shavuot, ben Adam lebore. And therefore, it's only applicable in Dine Adam. It's not applicable when it's Dine Shamayim, when you're dealing with Hekdesh. So despite the fact that Hekdesh is exempt from Shavuot, Shavuot Eseit will not come and fill that void. So that's the view of Rav Haigon. And the Torah brings down, V'had debin and kfirat bet ma'in, dafka b'mode b'miksat. That's only true b'mode b'miksat, aval b'kofer b'kol, v'eid echad machisho, afilu lo kafar, elo b'pruta, chayav. Kofer b'kol is chayav. By Shavuot HaShomrim, which we discussed yesterday, there is a machloket between the Rishonim. Ubishvot HaSeit Katav Rav Ishaya, Shetzarich Kfirat Bet Ma'in. Rav Ishaya had written that you need a real, full denial or claim. To hold the Tikkun Rabbanan, Kein D'Oraita Tikkun. So now you see the other side of what is arguing on Rav Haigon. That Shavuot HaSeit, which is the most like a Shavuot D'Oraita, which is a Nishba V'Niftar, it should have the same din. And therefore he says you should have a minimum requirement of Shtei Ma'ot in order to be Chayav. Because Kein D'Oraita Tikkun, Aval Rav Haigon Katav Shemashbin Oto Afilo Shavuot Pruta V'Achi Mistavro. So the Torah says there is a machloket in the Geonim about this, but he says I think Rav Haigon is correct, and that we do not have the trappings of the Shavuot D'Oraita, and that's going to give you a lot of room to work with that. And the Beit Yosef, when he quotes this on the Torah, says that the Rabbi Shaya, that even the Ran also writes, the Mistavra Shemichaminatova Pachot Mishtei Kesef. So this concept persists into the time of the Rishonim, that Shavuot Eseit should not be a broad Shavuot, but should still have the trappings of Modeh B'Miksat. It's an extension of Modeh B'Miksat, and therefore it should require the Ta'ana of Shtei Kesef. The Shut Arif, who discusses this, he says, I looked into your matter, and he says here that with regards to Shavuot Eseit, we have a Mesorah from the Geonim. It says here, V'chol Tviyot Shebalah Mishevet Pruta L'mala, Heinich Nasim B'chlau Zohat HaKana, Tafi Shekol, מי שתובע את חברו בשום דבר, שאם לא היה מודה בו, היה מתחייב וכפר בו, הרי הוא מתחייב בשבועת עשה, זולתי הקדשות, שאם הודה, משלם, ואם כפר, אינו נשבע. So the Rif Pol toes the line that we saw in the Rav Haigon, that Shvuat Aseid has greater expansion than just what we would have thought because of the connection to Modeh v'Miksat. Then you have the Shut Maram Rutenberg who writes about Dati Notein Shvuat Karka, a Shvuat that you take on Karka, which is Shvuat Aseid, that Gzerta Lo Ma'Pchinan Al Shekinegdo. You can't flip it onto the other party because it is a Takana Derabanan. And a Takana Rabbanan cannot have another Takana Derabanan sit on top of it. That is something we're going to see in about a minute in the Gemara, that when it comes to Shvuot Derabanan, when the party is questionable in his reliability, we're not going to flip the Shvuot in this case because it's already a Takana Derabanan. You're not going to make a Takana to a Takana Derabanan. You're not allowed to flip them only by Shvuot De'oraita. And so what he says is that the fact that you take Shvuat Aseit on Karka, which is clearly a Shvuat Derabanan, you can't flip that on the other party. The Rav Yoh, this is the last of the Rishonim that we'll see, the Rav Yoh Netshuva, he writes about an experience he had with his father in terms of a Shvuat on Karka, and he writes, V'nira de'en li shva klala karkot. There's no reason to take a Shvuat on Karkot. Afilu Shvuat Aseit. Vein la'arich, and I don't have to go on so much about it. Ki galoi lakol, lachem akol. You guys know everything, and it's clear that you don't take a shvuah on karka. So you see this tension within shvuat haseid as to what the extent of shvuat haseid is. Rav Nachman here is clearly coming to plug a hole. The question is, how big a hole did he plug? According to many of the Rishonim, we saw this in the Rav Yoh, we saw some of this from Rav Yishayah, from the Ran, is that this is just a modem mixat shvuah in kofar bakol. There's all the trappings. You need to have shtei kesef. You need to do it on mitaltalim. It can't be on karko. It has all the trappings of modeh b'miksat, just it's established by kol rav kol. You have others like the Rav Haigon, the Rif, and the Tur, who are in the opposite direction, which is Rav Nachman's trying to prevent people from being able to walk away and establish shvuat haseid. Shvuat haseid plugs all holes. That means if you're below the minimum threshold, you're taking a shvuah. Karka, you're taking a shvuah. All of those areas where Shvuat didn't apply, Shvuat Haseit is going to come and plug that hole. And so that is the extent or expanse of Shvuat Haseit. And obviously it has major nafkaminot as to in Batei Dinim what you can impose on the individual. And by the time of the Rishonim, the Shvuot have gone away, but they still have the Arur and the Shamta that they use. That Arur and the Shamta, the Gonim, where do you apply it? You apply it in the same places you would have applied a Shvuah. Some of the Gonim are willing to extend it even to Karka, because there is not a Shvuah and a Narur, but you can see that the same issues that were by Shvuat Aseit come up in the Rishonim and trying to decide where to apply it and when to have Shvuot Arur apply to individuals. So now that is just a small introduction because we're about to deal with Ma Ika ben Shvuot Doraita, the Shvuot Derabanan. What is the difference between a Shvuot Doraita to a Shvuah Derabanan? What is a Shvuah Doraita? Modeh v'miksat. That everybody agrees to. What is the case of Shvuah Derabanan? Rashi claims over here, Shvuah Derabanan, Hadrab Nachman. Shvuah Taseit. So Rashi, and he's backed up also by the Rimi Gash, both say very clearly that the Gemara here is trying to distinguish between Shvuah Doraita and Shvuah Taseit. And they want to know what the difference is. And the Rimi Gash notes that the similarity between them, that you're able to be nishba v'niftar, is what drives the Gemara to ask the question, what's the difference between a shva d'oraita and a shva d'rabanan? On the other hand, there are many that believe, many rishonim, who disagree to say that the shva d'rabanan we're speaking about here is not just shva taseit, it is any shva d'rabanan. This is a broad question about shva d'oraita versus shva d'rabanan. The Baal HaTosafot supposed here quote a Rashi from Tuvot, which is actually a very important Rashi. Rashi says that there is a difference between Shvuah D'oraita and Shvuah D'rabanan. There the Gemara makes its distinction. And Rashi says the nafka mina is nikitat chefetz. Do you have to hold a mitzvah in your hand? Whether it's a Sefer Torah, tefillin, like we discussed before, do you need to hold it in your hand? Rashi claims in Kitin that that's a nafka mina between D'oraita and D'rabanan, which is that in a Shvuah D'oraita you need nikitat chefetz. In a Shvuah D'rabanan you do not need nikitat chefetz. The Rabbeinu Tam there in Kitin argues against this position of the Rashi because he says the Gemara here is going to ask what the Nafkamina is and it never mentions Nikita Tchefetz. That would be the simplest way to understand what the difference is. How come it's not mentioned over here? Based on that, he says, Rashi's wrong. I can show you from this Gemara that the Gemara never mentions that as a difference between them. And therefore, Nikita Tchefetz is not a Nafkamina between them. Others say that that's not the question of the Gemara over here. Like the Rimi Gash says, the question of the Gemara here is not about what we call the ceremonial parts of the Shvuah, but rather about the content or the Ikar Shvuah. And therefore, the Gemara here doesn't discuss Nikitat Chefet because that's something that relates to the ceremonial aspects of the Shvuah, not to the core Shvuah itself. And that's why it's absent over here. And therefore, there are a slew of Geonim, who probably Rashi was following, that believe that there is a difference between Doraita and Derabanan, which is that Doraita you have Nikita Tchefetz, by Derabanan you do not have Nikita Tchefetz. It's clear that Balei Tosafot and other Rishonim who disagree. And that's exactly why some of the Rishonim believe we're not speaking about Shvuat Haseit over here, because that is a key difference between Shvuat Doraita and Shvuat Haseit, is Nikita Tchefetz. And that's their evidence that the Gemara here is not speaking about Shvuat Haseit like Rashi, but rather about the Shvota Mishnah, which we're going to see later in the Masechta. So now, Ike Beinayu, the difference between them is Mepach Shvua. That's something we mentioned in the introductory comments about flipping the Shvua. Bida Oraita, Lo Mepchinan Shvua. When it comes to a Din Doraita, we don't flip the Shvua. Bida Rabbanan, Mepchinan. By a Rabbanan, we do flip the Shvua. So Rashi here explains what that means is, Imamara Nitba, La Toveya Shbiya Vitol, if you say to him, take a Shvuah and you can take it, we allow him to flip it. The basic distinction is that by a Shvuah Doraita, the claimant can stand on ceremony, we'll call it. He can say, listen, the Torah imposed a Shvuah on you, you don't want to take the Shvuah? Pay, and I'm in the right here. Torah imposed the Shvuah as a way for you to justify your position, to exonerate yourself. If you don't take that, you're going to pay, and I'm not going to back off of that. You can't flip the Shvuah to me. That's not my responsibility. Then when the Rabbanan instituted a Shvuah, they instituted it in order to deal with either here, Shvuat HaSeit, certain circumstances, or in the Shvuot HaMishnah, if you believe it's also in those where Nishvah V'Notel. So over here, the question is, can you flip the Shvuah onto the other party? Question by Shvuat HaSeit, the way that Rashi reads it is, can the Nitba, the person who is the defendant here, flip it onto the claimant and say, listen, the Rabbanan imposed the Shvuah. I'm not so interested in taking the Shvuah. If you want the money, just take the Shvuah and you can have your money. That he's allowed to do by Shvuah the Rabbanan because there's no underlying obligation here to take a Shvuah. The Shvuah is an imposition, me, the Rabbanan. So that's why there's a difference between Doraita and the Rabbanan. Again, here, Doraita would be, you cannot flip the Shvuah. The defendant, because it's Nishvah and Iftar, has to take the Shvuah. Whereas by the Rabbanan, according to Rashi, it is the Nitba again, because the Shvuah Taseh can flip it to the Toveya. Rashi in Tuvot says that this idea of Mepach Shvuah has application to all Shvuot Tirabanan, not necessarily uniquely to Shvuah Taseh. On the other hand, the Rif and the Ramban, who follows in the way of the Rif, because of the Mesorah from the Gaonim, believe that Mepach Shvuah only has application by Shvuah Taseh, and not by a case of Shvuah Tirabanan. And their reasoning is that by Shvuat HaSeit, where the Shvuah is on the Nitba, you're allowed to flip it onto the Toveya, then the Shvuot HaMishnah, where the Shvuah starts out on the Toveya, clearly the Nitba does not have to take a Shvuah in that case. The whole point of the Mepach Shvuah is to allow the Nitba to push the Shvuah to the Toveya. The Shvuot HaMishnah, the Ikar Takana, was on the Toveya, so there you can't have a Mepach Shvuah to throw it back to the Nitba in those cases. And for that reason, the Ramban believes, like the Rif and the Geonim, that this only has application by Shvuat HaSeit, not by Shvuot HaMishnah, although Rashi seems to be indicating that it has application to all Shvuot HaRabbanan. Ulamar bar Ravashi, damar bidoraita, nami mavchinan Shvua. Currently, Mar bar Ravashi, who says you're allowed to flip a Shvua, even in Doraita, onto the other party, Ma'ika ben Doraita de Rabbanan. Then what's the difference between a Doraita and a de Rabbanan? Over here, there is an important statement here. Mar bar Ravashi is one of the latest Amoraim that appears in the Gemara. Rav Ashi put the Gemara together. So he's the son of Rav Ashi. So I mean, he's even post, technically, the putting together of the Gemara. So he's still mentioned in the Gemara. And so he carries a tremendous weight in terms of being a Batra and the Halacha being like him. So over here, that's the question that comes up. You can see that in the Balei Tosafot. He says, Rivan Peres Rishem Kuntris, the Hilchato Kavatei. Rivan says in the name of the Kuntris that the Halacha is like Marbar Ashi. The Kaimalon Kamarbar Ashi B'Mepach Shvua. That here when we're flipping the Shvua, that the Din D'Oraita is flipped as well, we pass and like him. V'chein b'tshuvat Rabbeinu Gershom or Agola. The Rabbeinu Gershom also says the Halacha is like this. V'chein Rav Haigon. And Rav Haigon also passes in Mar Bar Avashi. Mar Bar Avashi carries tremendous weight in terms of Halacha. And therefore over here too, we would think the Halacha is like Mar Bar Avashi. Balei Tosafot go on to explain and speak about this and say, Miu Agonim Nechlaku Bahahi. The Gaonim argue on what we just said. And they say that you can't bring any raya over here to what is being said that Mar Bar Avashi is Halacha is like him. And you can see it more explicitly in the Rabbeinu Chananel, which is Mar Bar Avashi ben de'orait mabchinen lei v'leit hilchato kavatei. The Halacha is not like him. The hilchato kavatei b'chol ha-talmud. The Halacha is like Mar Bar Avashi anywhere in Shas, bar mi beipach shua v'chivarei. With the exception of two cases. And this is one of the two cases where there's an exception to the rule. And the Balei Tosafot in the end also bring from the Gaonim and from the Tshuvaot HaKadmaniyot, he calls them, and Sevider Tanaim V'Amoraim. He brings all of them saying that the Halacha is not like Mar Bar Avashi over here. So it's important to note that generally the Halacha is like Mar Bar Avashi. This is the exceptional case in Shas, where the Halacha is not like Mar Bar Avashi. So now, the Gemara says, okay, according to Mar Bar Avashi, who says that even b'doraita we flip Shavuot, Ike benayu mechat lenichsei. Are you allowed then to go down and confiscate his property and collect on whatever it is that you're trying to collect? B'doraita nechtina lenichsei. In the Torah prescription, if he's not willing to take a Shavuah, we're going after his possessions. Because a Torah Shvuah is something that has monetary impact. It's something where the Torah gives you either a right to dismiss the obligation by taking a Shvuah. If he's unwilling to take the Shvuah, then he's got to pay. B'derabanan lo nachtina nichsei. A Shvuah derabanan is trying to compel you to get to a certain conclusion or to either give you believability or to dissuade you from lying in these situations. But it doesn't have the power to make monetary claims on your behalf. If you've refused to take a Shvuah d'Rabbanan, doesn't mean that you have now an unmonetary obligation to pay. So the Rabbi Yossi d'Amar, b'd'Rabbanan nami nachtina nechsei, we do have an opinion that even in Shvuah d'Rabbanan, you can go down and go after the possessions. It's non mitziat cheresh shoteh v'katan. This is the Mishnah that we have in Gittin. Yesh behen gezel mipnei darchei shalom. There is a din of gezel because of darchei shalom. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Gezel Gamur. It's not Darkei Shalom, it's real Gezel. Amar Rav Chista, when he meant Gezel, it means Gezel Gamur Midivreyem. It's a full-fledged Gezel Midirabanan. L'may nafka mino. What's the difference between whether it's Darkei Shalom or Gezel Dirabanan? Lotzio, Bedayanim. Whether you can take him to court and force a retrieval of the object. If it is Darkei Shalom, we encourage the individual to do this, to keep the peace. But it's not a court-enforceable dictate. On the other hand, if you think that it's Gezel Midirabanan, that means that it's a court-enforceable dictate, and that means that we're going to be motzi by Gezel Dirabanan. So you see there that even in Dinei Dirabanan, Rabbi Yossi believes that you have a right to do get the person's property, confiscate the person's property, or make him pay, because it's a court-enforceable obligation, Midirabanan. The Balei Tosafot ask over here, how do you know that it's only Rabbi Yossi that believes that? Their machloket is about the case of Mitziat Cheresh Shoteh V'Katan. That's where they argue. Implicit in that is that the Rabbanan agree with Rabbi Yossi in other places. And they also believe that Gezel Dirabanan. So why do you know that only Rabbi Yossi holds of Gezel Dirabanan and not the Chachamim? Balei Tosafot over here leave that as a tzarachion, or they say, I don't know. Maybe the Rabbanan also agree in other areas. The Rimigash, once again here, comes in and steps in and says that he thinks that that's not the case because of the language that Rabbi Yossi uses. He calls it Gezel Gamur. So when he says Gezel Gamur Midivreyem, that makes it sound like that's his view across the board. And this is a unique view of Rabbi Yossi, that whenever it comes to Gezel Derabanan, he calls it Gezel Gamur, Midivrehem, and that's what makes it enforceable in court, and that's what allows you to confiscate the property. But the Rabbanan don't necessarily agree with that, even if they think there's Gezel Derabanan, they don't believe that it's Gezel Gamur. They don't use that same terminology. So now, Ika Benayu, what's the nafkamina then between a Shvua Doraita and a Shvua Derabanan? Shekenegdo Chashud Al Shvua. If the other party is suspect in a Shvua, this is different than the flipping of the Shvua before. The flipping of the Shvua before was up to the Nitba. It was up to the party who was the defendant if he wanted to flip the Shvua onto the other party. There we said Bidoraita, he doesn't have a right. Bidorabanan, he does have a right. Here we're speaking about a problem where you have a defendant who is Chashud al Shvua. He can't take the Shvua because he is not believed. We don't have a honest party over here. So what you're going to do is flip the Shvua to the party on the other side and say, you take the Shvua because we can't believe the guy who needs to take the Shvua. So what the Gemara says is that idea of a flipping the Shvua is only a requirement in the Doraita. So that we do it as a b'chinen le'shvua b'samu a'idach. We flip the Shvua and put it on the other party. Bider Rabbanan, takantai. By Rabbanan, it's only a takanad Rabbanan. Mitakanta letakanta lo avdinan. When it comes to a takanad Rabbanan, we don't overlay another takanad Rabbanan on top of an existing takanad Rabbanan. It's the equivalent of what we know in other places in Shas as gzeira le gzeira. Similar idea, which is that once you have a din derabanan, we don't then build a different din derabanan on top of this din derabanan. And similarly over here, epach shvua is a way to deal with a problem in the doraita level. The Rabbanan say, listen, we have a problem here. We need the guy to take a Shvua, but he can't take a Shvua. If we leave things the way they are, the individual is going to be in trouble because now everybody knows this guy is not trusted in a Shvua. People will come and make claims against him. Everybody in the world will come with a false claim against him, and now he's going to be stuck because he's going to deny it. He's going to have to take a Shvua. He's chashud ala Shvua, and now they're going to have to force him to take a Shvua. He can't take it. He's going to have to pay. So what we do is we flip it on the claimants and say, listen, you got to take the Shvua in this case to substantiate your claim because the defendant can't take it. That's only true by Shvuot Deoraita, because that's an institution Derabanan to flip it in order to do that. But if you already have a Shvua Derabanan, which is already an institution Derabanan, on that you're not going to layer on another institution Derabanan on top of a Din Derabanan. And that's what, if you remember, when we, in the introduction, the Maharam Mirutenberg said, that ain't seem takanta le takanta. If you already have a shvua on karka, which is an institution derabanan, we can't then on top of that have mepchinan on top of that because we don't institute a takanta le takanta when it comes to shvuot derabanan. So that he also mentioned that idea, once you establish something is a shvua derabanan, you can't then layer on other dine derabanan on top of it, and that will be the nafkamina between them in this case. Now, other places in Shas, in Baba Metzia, Hey Amud Aleph, and in Baba Metzia, Tzadichet Amud Aleph, the Balei Tosafot deal with the problem of Shvuat Aseit. Shvuat Aseit is a din derabanan, and by Shvuat Aseit, if he is chashud al Shvua, then he can't take the Shvuat Aseit. So now that's a din derabanan, and din derabanan, we don't flip it. That means that what people are going to do is they're going to come make a claim against a party who they know is chashud al Shvua. He's going to deny it. He's telling the truth. He's denying that which is there. So now when he denies it, he has to take a Shvua Aseit. He can't take it because they don't trust him. But now you can't flip it because it's a Shvua Derabanan, and you don't allow the flipping of the Shvua. Now this guy's in a bind where he can't take a Shvua Derabanan, and now he's going to have to pay because he is unwilling to take the Shvua Derabanan. So there the Palei Tosafot suggests that in those situations, we either will flip the Shvua, or we're going to ask you to substantiate your claim. You can't just show up with a willy-nilly claim unless you have some evidence of a claim, something to back up your claim. You can't just show up in court and say, you owe me this money. That's just not going to work in these situations. Otherwise, this guy is free game. Everybody's going to bring him to court and say, you owe me money, and then he's going to end up having to pay. So what the Balei Tosafot say is, either you're going to have to flip the Shvua, or you're going to have people substantiate their claims, because otherwise this person will never get out of paying in situations like that, and people will take advantage of him. So now the Gemara says, The Rabbanan argue in Rabbi Yossi and say that there is no din of Gezel de Rabbanan. Damer de Rabbanan lo nechtin anechsei. This is your question, David, which was, if the Rabbanan, you don't go down and take his possessions, my abdinanle, what do you do and enforce it? If you take away the teeth of enforceability, which is doraita, if you don't take the shua, you're going to lose your money. But the Rabbanan, if you don't take the shua, you don't lose your money. Where's the teeth in the shua de Rabbanan? Okay, I won't take the shua de Rabbanan. It doesn't change anything in the case. So what gives you teeth? The Gemara says, mishamtinanle. We put him into shamta. We excommunicate him. And again, in their day, that was a significant policy tool because people lived in small towns and small areas. If you were excommunicated, it had a significant impact on your life and on your family. And it was a serious thing. It involves also the inability to do business, to transact, to interact with these individuals. You really are cut off from the area where you live and the society in which you are involved. So Amalei Ravina, the Ravashi. Wait a minute. Ravina says to Ravashi, Hai nakte bekuvsei, the nishpeke leglime. So here, I'll just read you the Rashi, since it's a little more graphic than we want to discuss. Rashi says, Ochzob beitzav atzvuimbo, ashiten lo talit shealav. That you grab him by his private parts until he gives you his cloak. Or in essence, the modern expression is where you have somebody over the barrel. If you're going to put him into shamta, shamta is a serious issue. And now he's going to be in a lifetime of shamta. So you're telling me we won't go and take his property, but you're going to put him to a lifetime of shamta. That is the equivalent of going down and taking his property. You basically have him over the barrel. You have the ability now to force him to pay money. And if you're going to do that, it's no different than going down to his property and taking his money. Because you put him in such a bind and painted him into a corner where he has no choice, that's his only choice is now to pay. And you've done the same thing effectively as going down and taking his property. So he says, that can't be the expiation. What do we do with him? We put him into shamta until the shamta expires when he's going to get malkot. We give him malkot and then he can walk. Which is based on a member of Rav in Kiddushin. Over there, the Memra in Kiddushin speaks about Rav used to give malkot for people who acted in certain ways. One of them, and that's why it's in Kiddushin, is a Mekadesh Bebiya. Someone Mekadesh Bebiya, Rav Nagde. Rav used to give him malkot for doing that, felt it was completely inappropriate. One of the other things that Rav used to give malkot for was someone who was in Shamta, someone who remained excommunicated for 30 days. Then he says, if a person doesn't rectify the situation or listen to the court within a 30-day period, we're going to give him malkot. That's not acceptable that the person is recalcitrant in that way to the point where he leaves the shamta on himself for 30 days. You hit the 30-day point, you're getting malkot because you're not listening to the beit din, you're not acquiescing to what you need to do. But the other side of that is, if you take the malkot, you can walk. So the guy has a choice now. To be in shamta for a lifetime, that's way too severe. That's as if you're going down into his property and taking his property. That's too much pressure. On the other hand, you can, for 30 days, put him to shamta. At the end of the 30 days, if he refuses, he can take his malkot and walk. And that's it. He has a choice. He wants to take the malkot de Rabbanan and walk away, he can do that. If he doesn't want to take the malkot de Rabbanan, he can pay. But there he has an option to walk away. And he has an option if he really believes that he's telling the truth and he can't pay or he doesn't have to pay, he can accept the malkot de Rabbanan and walk away from it. But he does have a way out. May not be the most pleasant way out, but he does have a way out. As opposed to the shamta, if you were to impose it on his lifetime, he has no way out of the problem because now he's stuck for a lifetime in this shamta, and that's an unfair way to exercise enforceability on the individual because that's the equivalent of basically taking his money because he's in such a bind that he will have no choice. And that comes back to what you're asking about, that when it comes to shamta and these types of mechanisms for encouraging people to do the right thing, including people who are not giving a get, you have to be very careful that the imposition is something that takes away rights from an individual, but does not paint them into such a corner where they have to listen, because then it becomes a get mi'useh, becomes a forced get. And that the Rishonim deal with extensively what is and is not considered to be a taking of rights, versus something that is too much pressure that they're going to have to give the get. That has to do with what impositions you can make on them in terms of their relationship with the city, their relationship with other parties, what are the things that you can do, and what is considered to be too far. But that is the line. The red line is exactly what's been discussed here in the Gemara. The difference between something that makes you, forces you, compels you to act, and therefore that will be a get me'useh, or similarly over here, it's the equivalent of going and taking his money, because he's going to have no choice but to do this, versus something where the person can live, but he can choose to live without those rights, and without those privileges, but he has a way to live, and he can make the choice. If he wants to live that way, fine. Like we said over here, he wants to take the malkot and walk, that's fine. The modern day Israel uses that, they take away your passport, they take away your driver's license, they take away privileges that you have, rights that you have, that will not compel you to do it, but if you want those rights, you have to acquiesce to what the Beit Din said. And that's how they do it today, is that they suspend rights, they do not compel you in a way that would then force the individual to do it. Amra Papa, Haiman de Apik Shtara al Chavrei, person who pulls out his star on his friend, Vamalei Shtara Paruahu. The guy says, it's a paid star, I already paid it off. Arminan Le, Lav Kokaminach, Zil Shlim. You don't have a right to do that. Go pay. Imamar Lishtava Li, if he says to the person holding the star, take a shvua, Amrinan Le, Ishtava Le. You say to him, take a shvua. So Amalei Ravacha Breidur Avala Ravashi, Huma Benze Lebugemet Shtaro. How is this different than another institution, the Rabbanon, where we force a shvua by a shtar? And that is Pugame Shtaro. Somebody who shows up with a shtar and says, you owe me money. But I will agree with you that you don't owe me the full amount in the shtar. You've already paid me half of the shtar. That is called Pugame Shtaro. Pugame means that you ruined. Pugam, right? You caused a defect in the shtar. You say that I have a claim against you, but the person making the claim already says that the shtar isn't completely valid because some of the money was paid back. In that case, the Rabbanan instituted that you have to take a shvua. The classic case of that is an almanah with her ktubah. When she goes to make a claim for a ktubah, where she says, I received a partial payment of the ktubah, but I'm coming to collect the rest of my ktubah. And the only evidence she has is the ktubah itself of the full amount. So there we say, take a shvua because you are pugame shtaro. The shtar may not have tokef anymore because she's already indicating that the shtar was partially paid back. Maybe it was fully paid back. How do we know what happened here? There we force the individual to take a shvua to substantiate their claim in the shtar. What the Gemara is asking now is, why does that make a difference? You're telling me that a person who comes with a shtar and there's a denial on the other side that you have to take a shvua to substantiate your shtar. That's whether you come with a full claim of the shtar or whether pogame shtaro. What's the difference now? A person who creates a defect in the shtar takes a shvua. Someone who doesn't have a defect in the shtar, you just told me, he can force a shvua. The defendant can say, take a shvua that I owe you the money. So that means any shtar you show up with, you're going to have to take a shvua for. Over there, if he doesn't make the claim for the shvua, we will make the claim on his behalf. We tell him, go pay it. But if he then interjects and says, take a shvua, then we tell him, take the shvua. So the key difference between them is the case of when the defendant doesn't ask for a shvua. In a case of pugame shtaro, if the defendant doesn't ask for a shvua, the court will ask the person to take a shvua because you've already ruined the shtar and there is suspicion here that maybe you got paid the whole amount and not just a portion of the amount. And therefore, we demand of the person making the claim to take a shvua irrespective of what the defendant says. Even if the defendant doesn't make the claim, the court will make the claim on their behalf, substantiate your shtar. On the other hand, if you come with a full-fledged shtar, and the other guy is a kofer bakol, and says that I don't owe you anything, the court's gonna first response to him is gonna be, pay. You gotta pay. You have a shtar against you, you gotta pay for it. Now, that is a principle which the Gemara mentions in other places, which is, shtarcha biyodi ma'avi. Why is the shtar in my hand? Unless I have a claim against you, what am I doing with the shtar? And that's why I have a claim against you. So that comes and gives the person a chazakah that if he's holding the shtar, that he has a full-fledged claim, and the other party doesn't have a right to deny it. On the other hand, the Rabbanim do give you an out to say that sometimes there are possibilities where the shtar will remain in the hands of the individual, And that is, the Gemara gives reasons in other places that maybe they don't have to pay for a new shtar when they have to go use it again. They wanted to reuse the shtar. He may not have had the shtar on the day the guy paid him back and he let him hold on to it. There are instances where that happens. In order to give the defendant a way to deal with that, we said he has a right to demand a shvuah. And when he demands that shvuah, then we say that he can ask that shvuah. We won't ask it for him. We won't demand it for him. But if he asks for it, he's entitled to it. So that's the difference between pogem shtaro, where it'll be a demand of beit din for the shvuah, versus a case where the guy's kofer bakol, where it's up to him. If he asks for a shvuah, he can be granted it. But beit din's not going to intercede and ask for the shvuah unless the defendant demands it in the case. If he is a young Talmud Chacham, we don't ask him to take a Shavuah in this case. Again, because the overwhelming evidence in the case is that he has a Shtar, and that means that he should have a valid claim. Besides that, we're dealing with a Tzurmei Derabanan who's trustworthy and doesn't want to have to take a Shavuah, and therefore we don't demand that the Shavuah be taken in that case. Amalei Rav Yemer Ravashi, Tzurmei Derabanan, Mishaleach Lima Deinche. Whoa, this looks like favoritism in court. You can let the Rabbanon go ahead and strip off other people's cloaks. I mean, they're going to be taking other people's monies and there's no deterrent against them making claims because they don't have to take a shvuah in these cases. You want them to be subject to the same rules of Beit Din and the same deterrents as everybody else. So what, you're just going to let them willy-nilly make claims and not have to substantiate their claims? Ella lo mizdakekinan le ledine. The way Rashi reads this is, the court doesn't accept the case. So instead of saying that we bring it into the court and then we say, oh, you don't have to take a shvuah, we don't accept the case at all. But that means we don't accept the case to force a shvuah, demechzei dechashtinamei, because it looks like we're chosheid in this tzumri derabanan, this tamar chokham, and that's not right. But on the other hand, Rashi says, velo li gavoto, he also won't have the right of collection. Daha amarle ishtabali delo praticha. Because the guy said take a shvuah, or would say take a shvuah to substantiate your claim. So what we do is we basically leave the case and say you're not going to be able to collect on the one hand. On the other hand, we can't force a shvuah on this guy because he's a tamar chokham. Basically, it becomes a stalemate and nothing happens. So the tamar chokham is going to have to make a decision. If he wants to bring the case and get his money, he will have to say voluntarily that I will take the shvuah so that Beit Din is not imposing on him and creating the chashad. If not, then we just leave the case like that. There still is a nafkamina, which is tafsinanle, which some of the Rishonim point out, that even though we won't accept the case, if the Talmud Chacham is tofes, grabs the property of the defendant here, we will not remove it from him because he has a claim with a shtar, which is a substantial claim, and therefore we will not remove it from him. So there is still, even if we don't accept the case, there is a nafkamina that he's holding the shtar, which is if he's tofes, if he grabs the property, then we will not remove it from him. All right. Monolibi adecha. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Vasi. Amalvet chaviro beidim. Tzarich lefor o beidim. A person who lends money to a party with witnesses has to repay it with witnesses. Ki amrita kameh Shmuel. When I said this over in front of Shmuel, Amar li yocholomar lo praticha bifnei ploni uploni. Vachulahem lemidinat hayam. I paid you back in front of these two witnesses, and those two witnesses are out to sea. They're on vacation, but I did pay you back in front of those witnesses. So now Shmuel is rejecting this idea that you can't have a demand for Edim because the party can always say, I did pay you back with Edim, and they just aren't here. And as the Ron points out, it's not that he actually has to make this Tana, that he returned it in front of Edim, and they are out to sea. But rather, because he has that option to say that, migo that he could have said that, we're going to believe him that he paid it back. He has nemanut now because he has that alternate claim which he could have made, which would have fulfilled the obligation to return it with Edim. Since he could have made that claim, we now believe him, even if he repays it or says he repaid it without Edim. And you can see that on the second Tosafot on the next Amud, where he says, Yesh lamar, deshmo achi kamar mitok sheyachol lomar mo praticha bifnei ploni ploni v'achulu ha'am medinat hayam. Although then Tosafot backs away from it and says, maybe the whole reason here is that there's a demand to be repaid with Edim, and this type of claim fulfills that obligation to repay with Edim, and not that he's Neman Bemigo, but he needs to make a claim that he paid it back with Edim. And he does that by saying that the Edim were there when I paid it, but they're not here anymore. And therefore he would have to make that claim according to this in order to be patur from having to pay. So then, Tanan, our Mishnah. Mana libi adecha, you owe me 100 zuz. Amarlo, hey, he says, yes, I do owe you 100 zuz. The machar amarlo, t'nei uli. Next day he comes back and says, pay me the money that you admitted to me yesterday. Nitativ lecha, I already gave him to you. I paid it back already. Patur. He doesn't have to take a shvua, but he also doesn't have to pay. In this case, he is a kofer bakol. Vahacha, kevin de tave be'edim. Over here where he is making the claim with edim, because otherwise there's nothing to speak about. If he comes and says, oh, the guy admitted to me he owed me the money, and the other guy says, I paid the money, it's just your word against his word. It must be a case where he made the claim in front of edim. So in front of edim he says, you owe me money, and the guy admits to owing the money. Command the osve be'edim dummy, and that's like he lent them the money in front of edim. Biktani patur. And yet the Mishnah says you are patur. So what the Gemara is saying is, this is the equivalent case of lending with edim, and yet we don't see that you have a necessity to repay with edim. When he says, natativ lecha, I already gave it to you, we exempt him from the shvua, despite the fact that there are no edim here. Tiyufta, duravasi, that seems to be a strong refutation of Ravasi's position in support of what Shmuel says here, which is that when you lend money with edim, you don't have to repay it with edim. I'm like, Ravasi, ana ki amre hecha dimi'ikoro osfe be'edim. What I said is a case where he lent money originally with edim. Very clear that he doesn't trust the guy. The reason you lend money with edim is because up front you don't believe the guy. You've already demonstrated that he doesn't carry believability, and that's why you lent with edim. Over here, when he originally lent them the money, he didn't do it in front of edim. That means he trusted the guy when he lent them the money. Now in the middle of the case, he's bringing edim. Now he can't change the fact that he lent them the money without edim. He trusted him up front. If he trusted him up front, then in the back end he also is trusted, which is that he doesn't have to bring edim. But if he had edim in the front end of the case, which shows or demonstrated that there was no trustworthiness in the beginning, then in the back end he also has a right to demand that it be repaid with edim. In that way, Ravasi differentiates between this case and the case of the Mishnah, and that's why in the Mishnah he's believed even without edim, because there he was lent the money without edim. My case is a case where he lent him with edim and demonstrated that he doesn't believe him. That means you got to pay it back with edim. Rav Yosef Matnei Hochi. Rav Yosef has this version of this memra. I'm Rav Yehuda Maravasi. Hamavad Cheirobo Be'edim. Eino Tzarich Lefaro Be'edim. The opposite of what we just saw brought in Rav Yehuda Maravasi, which is over there, you lent with edim, you have to repay with edim. Over here, it's just the opposite. If you lend with edim, you do not have to pay with edim. Bimamar al tifreini elo be'edim. If he stipulates that as a condition of the loan, don't pay me back except with edim, tzarich leparo be'edim. Then you do have to pay him back with edim. So ki abrita kamei de Shmuel. So Rav Yehuda says, when I sent this over in front of Shmuel, remember, Rav Yehuda learned by Rav originally, and then moves over to Shmuel after Rav passes away. So many times we'll see Rav Yehuda mentioning Memrot of Rav, or here there are Talmidim of Rav as well, that he mentions to Shmuel, and Shmuel reacts to it. So still over here, he's reacting to this memory he's bringing in the name of Rav Asi, which is Amale Yachol Omar Lo Praticha Bifnei Ploni Ploni Vachol Ha'em Lemidinat Hayam. Again here, Shmuel says, even if he makes a condition, don't pay me back except edim, then he can make a claim that I did pay you back in front of edim, just they're out to sea. They're not around anymore. Tznan. So again, we bring our Mishnah. Mano lebi adecha. You owe me 100 zuz. Amar lo hein. He agrees and says, yes, they do. Amar lo alti neoli elabifnei edim. He says, don't give it to me except in front of edim. Lemachar amar lo tneoli. The next day he says, pay me back the money you admitted to yesterday. Nitativ lecha, he says, I already paid you back. Chayav, over there he has to pay the money. Mipnei shetzarich liten lo be'edim. Because there it says you have to repay with edim. The Mishnah is explicit that when edim are demanded, if you don't pay back with edim, you're not believed and you're going to have to pay again. Tiyufta di Shmuel. That is a strong refutation of the position of Shmuel. So Amar lecha Shmuel, Tanaehi. It's actually a machloket tanaim. You're right. Our Mishnah is not like what I said, but I'm subscribing to a different Tana's position, which is the Tanya. Beidim hilviticha. If I lent you with edim, beidim parali. I want you to repay me with edim. O itain, o yavi raya, shinatan. Either he has to give it with edim or bring evidence of the fact that he returned the money. Rabbi Yehuda ben Matei Omer, yachol lomar lo, praticha bifnei ploni yiploni, vachulam lemidinat hayam. can make a claim that it did pay you back in front of so-and-so, and now they're out to sea, they went on vacation, they're gone away, and they can't testify about it, but I did pay back in front of Edim, and I fulfilled my side of the obligation. So here you see exactly that machloket Tanaim. Shmuel's position is in line with what Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira says. Our Mishnah is in line with what the Tanakhama says. The Tanakhama says you must bring Edim in order to substantiate the fact that you repaid him, because that was the demand of the loan. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira says you can make a claim that you did have Edim, just they're not around. You don't have to actually bring those Edim to court. That would be Shmuel following that position of Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira. Parech Ravacha, Mimai, Tebishat Halvo, Koi. How do you know that we're speaking about a case where it was at the moment of the loan? Dilma, Bishat Tviya, Koi. Maybe it's at the time of the claim that we are speaking about it. Behachi Gamarle. And this is what he's saying to me. La beidim ilviticha. Beidim ayalach alaporani. That didn't I lend you with money with edim? Now you should have to pay me back with edim. Aval bishat alva divrei hakol chayav. But had it happened at the time of the lending, everybody would agree with you are chayav. What Rav Acha is pointing out is that maybe the machloket tanaim there is a derivative of when the conversation takes place. Which is that if we know for certain, and he lent him with Edim, and we have evidence, we have Edim substantiating that he lent him with Edim, then of course he's going to have to pay back with Edim. Everybody's going to say he's chayav to return it with Edim. The only question is, if after the loan was given, the creditor comes and says, I lent you with Edim, so now pay me back with Edim. He's only making that statement later on. He doesn't have the Edim here. He's making the claim that I did lend you with Edim. Now you must pay me back with Edim. Maybe there, that's where we have a machloket Tanaim as to whether the Edim are needed in order to return the money. Because when he brought him to court, and the guy says, I paid you back, the creditor says to them, Halo be'edim yiluticha, didn't I lend you with Edim? And now you should have to pay me back with Edim. But he didn't say that at the time of the halva'ah. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira says you are patur over there because of the fact that it didn't happen at the time of the halva'ah. It's not at the time of halva'ah that he stated explicitly that you have to pay me back with Edim. He just says, didn't I lend you with Edim, which should require you to pay back with Edim. That type of claim, that's where you have a machloket. But Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira says patur there would agree if at the time of the loan you specifically state, don't pay me back except with Edim, maybe he would agree that you are chayav. So I'm Rav Papi Mishmei the Rava Hilchato. So now we have Rav Papi in the name of Rava saying the lach is Amalvet Chaviro Beidim Tzarich Liparo Beidim. That if you lend your friend with Edim, he has to pay it back with Edim. Rav Papa Mishmei the Rava Amar Amalvet Chaviro Beidim Ein Tzarich Liparo Beidim. If you lend your friend with Edim, you do not need to pay it back with Edim. Vim Amar Al Tifreini Elo Beidim. If he says, don't pay me back except with Edim, he specifically stipulates he wants it back with Edim, Tzarich Liparo Be'edim. Then he does have to pay it back with Edim. And if you take a quick peek in the Baal Tosafot, the Meir Rabbeinu Tam, Ken Alocha, that the Alocha is like Rav Papa over here, and not like Rav Papi. V'imamar lo praticha bifnei ploni yiploni, v'achu lehem lemidinat hayam, ne'eman. If he says that, I did pay you back in front of Edim, but they're overseas, he is believed in that case. Now, you have to be aware here, you can see the little star by the word ne'eman, that there were alternate girsaot, and you can see that in their Beinu Hananel. V'im amar lei praticha bifnei ploni ploni v'alchu lehem l'midinat hayam, eino ne'eman. That's what the Rabbeinu Hananel says, that he is not ne'eman in that case. And if you look at the parentheses with the star in the Gemara there, it says, kach hayta gam ken girsat ha-rashbo. That was also the girsat ha-rashbo b'divir ha-beinu. But the Rosh thinks that the Rabbeinu Hananel has a different girsa, and this is a mistake in the girsa. And it turns out that the Rabbeinu Hananel, the Rif, the Rimigash, and most of the Chachmei Svarad have the girsa of Enu Ne'eman. On the other hand, many of the Gaonim, including the Baal Halachot Gedolot, the Rav Hai Gaon, and the Rambam, who also is Goreis Enu Ne'eman, which you can see in the Masoret HaShas that's brought over here. And obviously it's a big nafkamina as to whether, when you have this setup, is the individual Ne'eman or not Ne'eman in this case. And the Chakira in their understanding of what the Tnai is might impact on what they think the conclusion is. Here the person, according to Rav Papa, said, Al Tifruni Ela Be'edim, only pay me back with Edim. The question is that a tnai, a condition in the repayment? And here, if he makes a claim that he repaid him in front of Edim, they're just not around, he fulfilled the condition, and therefore he's done with the payment. Or do we say when he says, don't pay me except in front of Edim, he is casting aspersions on the debtor's reliability to him, and that means that he wants Edim to show up and testify to the fact that this guy repaid the money, otherwise he's not going to accept it as repayment. And therefore he demands Edim to be present and to testify in order to have Nemanut. And for that reason, the Rif and many of the others that follow the Girsa of Einu Neman believe over here he's not Neman because he stated up front that I want to be repaid with Edim, meaning that you have no believability until you show up with Edim. You can't make a claim that you paid an Edim and now they're not here because I demanded that you bring Edim in order to substantiate your claim. So now, what you have here is a machlok between Rav Puppy and Rav Papa. Rav Puppy says that if you lend money in front of Edim, got to be paid back in front of Edim. What the Gemara is dealing with here in this section is how do we get a person to be able to lend money and then get his money back, but get his money back in a way where the defendant or the debtor doesn't have a way to just slip out of it and say, I paid. So according to Rav Puppy, the solution to that is to lend money with Edim. You lend money with Edim, there's a requirement that the money be returned with Edim, and that's going to secure your ability to get your repayment. The other hand, Rav Puppy says over here, that doesn't work, because even if you lend with Edim, they still don't have to pay it back with Edim. So Rav Puppy says the way to deal with it is to stipulate at the time of the loan that I only want to be paid back with Edim. But then Rav Puppy says, even on that, there's a way to slip out of it, because you have Shmuel's din, which is that if you say that I paid you back in front of so-and-so and they're overseas, then he is believed. So now, that goes back to what Rav Puppy said on the previous amud, which is, Amar Rav Puppy, I mind the offbeat shtar al chavrei, someone who pulls out a shtar on his friend, v'amar le shtar paruahu, and the guy says, yeah, I paid it already. We say to him, Armin le'lav ko koi minach. You don't have a right to deny it. Zil shlim, go pay. So you see where Rav Puppa's solution to the problem is? Rav Puppa says, use a shtar. You want to protect yourself. You want to be secure in receiving the payment back? Use a shtar. As long as you have a shtar in your hand, you're going to have a right of collection. The guy can't claim that you were repaid. So Rav Puppa says the solution to the problem is lend with Edim, because then he'll have to pay you back with Edim. Rav Puppa says the solution to the problem is lend with the shtar. You lend with Edim, you're going to run yourself into a problem. Even if you specifically stipulate the tnai, he can still play games and say, I paid you back with these Edim and they're gone. So how do you protect yourself? You'd lend with the shtar. So what you see here is a tension within the Amoraim as to how do we get creditors to lend money in a way that they are secure that they will receive payment back and that the debtor won't have a right of claim that will exempt them from the payment. Ha'od amalei lechavre. Person says to his friend, Kiparatin, parin li be'ape Ruvain v'Shimon. When you pay me back, please pay me back in front of Ruvain and Shimon. Azal upari be'ape trei me'alma. He paid him back in front of two Edim, but the two Edim happened not to be Ruvain and Shimon. Amar abai be'ape trei amarle be'ape trei pare. He wanted to be paid back in front of Edim. He got paid back in front of Edim. What else could he ask for? Amale rova, v'achar gamile be'ape Ruvain Shimon, keiche lo nidche. He says, no, that's why he specifically asked for Reuven and Shimon, so that he can't play games and push them up and say, oh, I paid you in front of these Edim and they're not here anymore. He wants these specific Edim because those Edim are trustworthy to him. Those Edim he knows are not going to disappear. And therefore, if he didn't fulfill his obligation to pay them in front of Reuven and Shimon, then he failed to pay him back. Because the creditor can say that the other two Edim are Shekerim. That's what Rashi says, that Zeomer, Ede Shekerim. They are not trustworthy. So now, the way that Rashi explains it, that he paid him in front of two Edim, and the creditor is saying, I don't believe those Edim. These Edim are lying. And that's why Rava comes along and says, that's why he specifically asked Reuven and Shimon, because he wanted trustworthy Edim. The Baal Tosafot quote that view of Rashi, but it's a very difficult view of Rashi. Why is it that a party can say these two Edim are liars? What right do you have to upend Edim that come and testify the fact that it was repaid? And therefore, the Rabbi Tosafot say, "In the claim near the re, demari tkamar paraticha ba'ape sade. I paid you back in front of witnesses, va'achulayam the medinat ayam, and they went overseas." And that's the way I explained it earlier, that the claim of here is that I paid you back in front of these Edim and they disappeared. The other guy says, I don't want that. I don't want Shmuel's din to be able to affect me. So how do I protect myself? I specify the Edim. And you can see that in the Rach, it says, Kataim praticha banpe sade achrine. Says, I paid you back from these other edim, achulim edinat eyam, but they went overseas. Aval, I itnuhu dimisade, if they are around to testify, the pare that he paid it back, lo amar Rava, de lo mehemnet. Over there, Rava does not say they are enu ne'aman. He is ne'aman in that case, because the edim are now present to give the testimony. And therefore, the problem here is that he's making a claim that they're overseas, and the guy says, that's why I picked Reuven and Shimon, because I knew they'd be around. You pick the Edim that are overseas, I'm not going to buy into that. But if he brings the other Edim, according to this view of the Tosafot and the Rabbeinu Hananel, then those Edim would be believed, just like Reuven and Shimon, as opposed to Rashi and the Rif, who say that the Edim over here are specified to the exclusion of any other Edim. And he's saying, the only Edim I believe are Reuven and Shimon. Any other Edim that you believe, bring. Even if they testify in court that you repaid it, they don't have Ne'amanut, and they're considered to be Edei Sheker. So that's another way where a person can protect themselves. If you hold like Rav Papa, that the halacha is even if when you lend with Edim, you don't have to get back, paid back with Edim. But if you specify it, you do. But then you can have Shmuel's Din. The way to avoid Shmuel's Din being a problem is what Rava states over here, which is demand that the repayment be in front of these specific Edim. Ha'od amale l'chavrei, ki paratli parinli be'avi be'trei, detanu hilchuta. Says that when you pay me back, I wouldn't want to pay me back in front of two individuals that know halacha, that are tamidei chachamim. Azal pare ben delay l'delay. He went ahead and paid him back privately, not in front of anybody. In nisu anachzuze. And then the money was stolen from the creditor after the debtor had repaid him the money. After the kamedah of Nachman, they brought the case to court in front of Nachman. Amarlei in. The creditor agrees, kabule kabledinu mine, I did get the money from him, derech pikadon, but I accepted it as a deposit, ve'amina, and I said, lave gabay pikadon, adim itmaru beitrei, detanu ilchuta umikayim tenei. I'll hold on to them on his behalf until we find two witnesses who are tamidei chachamim, and then he can fulfill his obligation, and then they'll be classified as a return of the loan. So what the creditor says is, listen, I stipulated this condition in the repayment. He was unable to fulfill the condition at that point in time. He handed me money. I didn't accept that as repayment. I accepted that as a deposit until we can get the condition fulfilled. So therefore, I am a shomer chinam. If I'm a shomer chinam, I'm patur on geneva v'aveda. And therefore, the money was his money that got stolen, and now he still owes me the money. Amalei, kevin dekamodit debadai shokotinu minei. Since you clearly state that you accepted the money from the debtor, piron ma'al yahavi, it is a full-fledged repayment. As Rashi says over here, zelo b'torat pikadon masrem lecha. This guy, when he paid you, he didn't intend for them to be a deposit. He clearly intended that to be the repayment of the loan. V'dvarim sheyu b'livcha einam dvarim. And whatever you had in your heart doesn't really matter. What you're thinking can't override the fact that the Lové, the debtor over here, thought he was repaying you the money. You said you thought he was giving it as a picadon, as a deposit. That doesn't matter what you were thinking. He was giving it as a repayment, and that's what it is, a repayment. B'kivi Eig over here says he doesn't really understand Rashi, because he says, why is it only according to the one who says, Dvarim Shebelev, Einam Dvarim? Even according to the one who says, Dvarim Shebelev, are still Dvarim, how is it that the individual here can affect what the Lové was thinking? The debtor is making a repayment. How is it that the Malve here has some right to dictate what the Lové is thinking? Even if you believe that Dvarim should believe are Dvarim, it still shouldn't work because you can't dictate to another party what their intent is. And over here, the debtor's intent is to repay the money. That's what Rabbi Kibu Eger says. He says, and if you say that this isn't real repayment because he never fulfilled the condition to repay it in front of two Tamei Chachamim, Zilaitinu, go bring that money that you said was a pikadon. Da'ana v'Rav Sheshet, I and Rav Sheshet who are here, Tanina Hilchata v'Sifra v'Sifrei v'Tosefta v'Kula Gemara, you have us two here, we learned all the halachot, all the Midrashei halacha, all the Braitot, and all the Gemara, and we will qualify. So you want to bring your money? We can qualify, or the payment happened, and now we are the two witnesses that you need, and the payment happened. Tosafot over here says, "Bedichuta ba'almo." He didn't literally mean that. It's not because he really needs to fulfill the Tanai over here. Rav Nachum was just saying this basically as in a joking manner, just to say, and if you really need your Tanai to be fulfilled, we're sitting here and we will fulfill the Tanai. Just bring the money here. Ha'od amar le lechavre, avli me'ezuze do ziftach. Guy says, give me back the 100 gzuz that I lent you. Amar le lo yudvari mildam. Says, never happened. Azal aite sade. Witnesses come along and say, the osfei upare. The money was lent, but it was also repaid. Amar Abaye, mani avad. What are we going to do in this case? Inu amre osve. The witnesses say that there was a loan. Inu amre pare. And they also say that it was repaid. So the only reason that we believe that there was a loan here is because of the edim. The guy says there was never a loan. So the witnesses are the ones who are dictating that there is a loan. But that same witnesses say that it was repaid. Rav Amar, kolomer lo liviti, kolomer lo parati, dummy. Anybody who says I didn't borrow the money is the equivalent of saying I didn't repay the money. If you deny ever taking out a loan, there's no way that you repaid the loan. So when a person says I didn't borrow, they're also saying I didn't repay it. And therefore this individual is dictating on himself that he didn't repay the loan. So even though the edim are coming along and saying they borrowed the money, but he repaid it, this individual is mi mechayev himself. He's creating an obligation on himself, as Rashi says, the admission of a litigant is the equivalent of 100 edim. And that's what he's doing over here. He's admitting that he never repaid it. He said, I never borrowed it. Of course he didn't repay it if he didn't borrow it. Tosfot over here does speak about reinterpreting his words. And why don't we do that over here? It gives one of two answers. Either if Beit Din is directly addressing him, he needs to answer in a clear and succinct way, so we're not going to reinterpret his words. Or he brings from the Shema Riva that when you say Lo Dayu Dvarim Me'olam, you can't reinterpret his words. He is not saying Lo Liviti, I didn't borrow the money, but he's saying that never took place. And there it's very hard to reinterpret his words because he's in complete denial of anything that happened. The creditor says, this individual, please give me back 100 zuz that I have extended the credit to you. Didn't I pay you back in front of so-and-so show up and say, never was repaid in front of them. Shesha thinks the edim come and deny what he's saying, that he's considered to be a denier now, and he's no longer believed, and he's going to have to pay. That anything that a person doesn't focus on, it's not something that they remember. So now Rashi explains that since the loan was never made, beidim, shlomar lo ze bishat alva beidim parali, hilkach lo samli bo li score im beidim para im shlo beidim, whether he paid with eidim or he didn't pay with eidim, because it was not a condition of the repayment. So when he said, I paid with eidim, he was just thinking that's what happened, but he didn't pay attention to that fact. As far as the core facts of the case, there he's definitely telling the truth. This was a sidebar, and he happened to remember incorrectly because it wasn't something that was demanded of him. And therefore, that is not considered a huzak kafran, because it's not a material piece of information that the person is going to remember. He remembers he paid it back. That's significant to him. Whether it was in front of Edim or not in front of Edim, he doesn't remember that, and therefore that's not going to make him into a huzak kafran. That's the way Rashi reads it. When I knew it that day, I would have read the Gemara slightly differently. And that is that he comes along and says, I paid back in front of so-and-so. They bring those Edim in, and the Edim say, we never saw it. Then Rav Shesha says he's huzak kafran. The Edim are denying what he's saying. Rava comes back and says, maybe not. People remember when it's relevant to them. People don't remember when it's not something that's relevant to them. So here, where the guy pays it back in front of these Edim, who says that the Edim were really focused on it or remember it? It wasn't their transaction. It wasn't something where they were signing on the document. It may not even been that they actually told them to be witnesses. They just happened to witness the event. But it's not something that is substantial to them, and therefore they don't recall what was said there. And that's what it is that Komilta Dolorami Alayde Inche Lavadate, that's a reference to the Edim, not a reference to the parties. And I saw afterwards that I was mitkavi in the dat Rabbeinu Chananel, because if you look in Rabbeinu Chananel, he says, Rabbi Amar, Komilta Dolorami Alayde Inche Lavadate, Perush Ha'edim. It's a reference to the Edim and not to the Bale Edim, unlike what Rashi stated. Tosfot knows over here that the Gemara in Baba Batra, in a similar case, which says that even though when you lend in front of Eidim, you don't have to repay with Eidim, but if he specifically states that he did repay it in front of Eidim, then you have to go check that evidence, and you have to verify that evidence, even though it's not necessary in the case. So why does Rav over here allow that even though the guy gave extra information that wasn't necessarily important, but why then are we not holding him accountable for that information? So the Bayit Tosafot say that Rav must believe, like the Manda Amar, that ain't Tzarech Laver on the other side of that machloket in the Amar and Bava Batra, that even if he gives extraneous information that wasn't necessary, we don't have to investigate it. Inami, you do have to check it out, but we follow the position of the Rabbeinu Tam, and what he says, the Rabbeinu Chananel seems to quote from the Yushalmi, that when there's an obligation to check out information, that is, if we go find and see if the information is true, Ilo mashkach lechu, if we don't find them, o atu v'amru lo adrim lo olam, or if we find them and they say nothing happened, lo mafsid, you don't lose out on that. And that's why over here, Rava says that even if we get the information that seems to undermine what this individual said, we're nevertheless going to uphold the case. Although the Bali Tosafot will point out that Rashi does not hold like that Rabbeinu Tam, and Rashi believes if there is an obligation, levarer, that if you have to check out the information, and if you find out the information and you find out it's not true, hifsid, you lose out. In that way, you would only give the first answer the Bali Tosafot gave, which was that Rava must be following the opinion that ain't tzarich levarer. Ha'ud amar le dachavrei, avalei shit me'azuzei demaskinim b'cha. Person says, give me back the 600 zuz that you owe me, that I am a creditor to you for. Amar le, v'lo praticha me'akave apse. Didn't I give you 100 kav worth of gallnut juice that was used for tanning, curing hides? The kaima b'shita shita. And each kav is worth 6 zuz. So if you multiply 6 zuz times the 100 kav I gave you, I repaid you the money of 600 zuz. Amalei, lav, arba'a, arba'a, v'kaimu. Wait a minute, the market price on that day was not 6, but 4. And you only repaid me 400. Ashu trei sade, v'amru. Two witnesses come along and say, in, v'arba'a, arba'a, v'kaimu. The market price on that day was 4. Amarava, huksak, kafran. He is a denier over here. This guy is clearly lying. He said he paid him back the full 600, and he didn't pay him back the full 600. Amarami barchama amart, komilto lo rami ale dinish lavadate. Brother, aren't you the one who self said that when people aren't focused on issues, they don't pay such close attention to it? Now, the way that Rashi reads it over here again is that he says, I paid you back 600. I don't know how I paid you the 600 back. I gave you this gallnut juice, and I might have paid you in cash. I don't know how I paid you back, but I think I remember giving you 100 kav of gallnut juice, and the price was 6. The creditor says the price was 4, and he brings a deed that substantiates his claim. So over here, Rashi, like he said before, says that this is focused on the market price. A person doesn't focus so much on the market price. He's focused on repaying the individual. He says, I got you 600 zuz. I didn't focus on what the market price was. I don't remember if I gave it all to you in materials or in cash, but I remember paying you back 600. In his mind, he thought maybe it was because the price was 6 on that day. But then it turns out it was 4. What Rami Barham is saying to Rava is maybe he doesn't remember the market price, and the market price was 4, and he paid him 200 in cash, plus the 100 kav that was worth 4 zuz per kav. So he says, Amalei Rava, kitsuta detara midkar dekirein she. That's not true. When it comes to the market price, people remember market price. That is a significant piece of information that people remember. Again, the way I would have read it, Laniyot Adi is referring to the Eidim. And that we say when the Eidim come and testify about the 4 zuz, we don't say that their testimony is so strong because that is a market price, but they weren't involved in the market on that day. These two parties were involved in the market, they might remember. But Eidim, who had nothing to do with the market on that day, now you're going to say, oh, they remember the price, or they didn't transact, or they weren't involved in this situation. How do they remember what the market price is? And again, here, the Rabbeinu Chananel says that, Kevin de la Ramia alayhu de sa'ade inshu, v'labadatayu. Since it wasn't an issue for them, for the same witnesses, they probably forgot about it. But in the end, Rava says, kitsuta de tara midka de chire inshe, makom Eidim, lo amrina ta'anata de lovet ta'ana. If Edim come and testify to that fact, then we're not going to say that the claim of the Loveh is a fair claim, because if the witnesses testify about what they thought the price was on that day, then that's what the price was on that day. They wouldn't come and testify unless they remembered that information. Okay, we're going to stop here. 7 lines down on the top of Membet, Amud Aleph.